Armchair commanders, we call the shots. From our living room thrones, where the action's hot. We're the generals of fiction, the masters of war. In silver screen battles with buttered popcorn. Armchair commanders, armchair commanders.
Alrighty, welcome to the Armchair Commanders podcast. My name is John.
And I'm Jack.
And this week, we are not reviewing Three Musketeers.
Yeah, we pulled a real sneaky one on you.
I know, I just... So here's what happened. So this week we're doing Back to Bataan, starring John Wayne. So it's still a John Wayne film this week. But Three Musketeers was supposed to be a John Wayne serial. So this was something that would play week to week in movie theaters during the 30s, like very old school kind of experience. And like each segment of this, because there's like a dozen of them, was like 20 minutes long. And I'm like, okay. And it equaled about 3 hours for the whole thing. And John Wayne plays a very notable character by the name of Tom Wayne. I wonder how that works. Anyways,
yeah, well.
Three Musketeers was supposed to be essentially Three Musketeers story, but like in Arabia, like North Africa, Arabia with the French Foreign Legion, that kind of whole shtick type of deal. And I watched 10 minutes of the first serial and I tried three different times and I could not pay attention to this fucking thing. And I'm like, I can't do it. So I vetoed my own choice and, replaced it with this.
Well, I'm glad you did. This movie actually turned out really good.
I was genuinely shocked. I guess I don't know what I was expecting. I was kind of expecting like a meh middle of the road film, especially for something that was created during the war. But no, this was like a shockingly good film.
Yeah. I mean, is it time for the elephant in the room or are we going to save that?
No, let's get it out of the way. Let's get
like, you're right. Like, better
as is tradition. Let's get the racist elephant out of the way.
Out of the yeah, him and his clan robes out of the way. But
it's so obnoxious. It's so much fabric.
Yeah, there was a part in this movie where it's a schoolhouse, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we hate the Spanish for what they did, man. Fuck them." And yeah,
fuck colonialism.
And then they're like, oh man, our American overlords are so great. They give us baseball and hot dogs. They would never genocide us or rule over us with an iron fist.
They would never colonialize us.
And it's
they did colonialize us, but it's totally cool when they did it.
Yeah, they were slightly nicer about it, we think.
And like the like schoolmaster. And here's the thing. So we got, or America, not us, me and Jack, America got the Philippines in like 1898. We got it as a peace settlement from Spain after the Spanish-American War.
As we revealed in a previous episode, I forget what that movie's called, but we dealt with a heroin-addicted Spanish soldier in the final days of the Spanish Empire holding out in an abandoned church.
In the Philippines.
In the Philippines. Which yeah. Is right.
And here's the thing, as demonstrated in that film, and also if you read a goddamn book every now and again.
But I can't read, we've been over this.
Yes. So, the Filipinos, really not cool with the whole colonization thing. Like, they actively fought against the Spaniards the whole like 300 years that they colonized the Philippines.
And like, they fought like demons too for it.
Oh yeah. And then the Spanish were like, okay, well, we just lost a war. What if we kill two birds with one stone called America stops fighting us and we get rid of a problem child colony at the same time?
Yeah, get two birds stoned at once.
Right. With opium.
With opium.
Yeah. That's a reference to the movie, the other movie we did. And so the United States kind of had like an identity crisis with this. Because up to this point, America, its expansion was all westward, like Manifest Destiny through the continental United States. Like it was a lot easier in the American mindset to God justify.
Damn it, the Blue Jays beat the Twins. Sorry, I got a notification on my phone.
Thank you. You said they beat the Twins?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Okay. Fuck the Blue Jays.
Anyways. Like, we were already wrestling with how we were treating our native population through westward expansion. But it was, air quotes, easier because we were expanding to the natural end of territory that America was on, like, with it, in proximity to. And receiving the Philippines as, like, a peace settlement payment was, like, a massive deal as far as a conversation in America at the time, because it's like, it was the turning point from us being a, just like a big player in our own right on our own turf to now we just took down a massive colonial power. And now we're wrestling with essentially becoming one ourselves. And there's a lot of people who are very much against it. Still took the Philippines anyways, but that led to a conflict called the Philippine Insurrection. I don't think that's a fair title for that conflict because it was their island.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to put it mildly, the Philippines, they didn't give a fuck about Spain and America's little deal. They're like, this is still our island. We don't give a fuck what kind of shenanigans you guys are playing. We don't want either of you on our beach, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Locals only, guys.
Yeah, you're not invited. Fuck off.
To which the United States did not like that. And we committed a lot of war crimes against the Filipinos.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
Some fuck shit.
If you remember, I said 1898-ish is when this happened. This movie takes place 40 years later. There are a ton of people alive who would have witnessed the fucking shit America did to the Filipinos to subdue the population.
Yeah.
So the whole rah-rah, like, America, since the Americans have came, we have lived by the creed that every man is free. And it's like, oh my God, like,
like, really? You learned that from us.
Yeah. Which is sure. Weird because, like, post-World War II, they were really cool with us, but that had more to do with us removing the Japanese. Because the Japanese were even worse than we were when they took over. So, you know, devil you know kind of attitude. But, plus, like, We won some brownie points when we voluntarily gave up the Philippines and let them, I shouldn't say let, but we're basically like, you know what? You do you. So that went a long way with our relationship with the Filipinos.
And it seems that there are no hard feelings because America has a 90 to 91% approval rating in the Philippines, and ours is similar for them, so we're cool.
Yeah, plus a booming mail order bride market from the Filipinos.
And not to mention, one of their greatest export is Facebook Reels so I can watch cooking videos while laying awake at 3 a.m. I've mentioned.
I, for one, am a huge fan of lumpia.
What the fuck's lumpia?
Not lumpia. Lumpia. L-U-M-P-I-A.
Cool. What the fuck's lumpia?
It's basically like a egg roll type deal, but it's like all meat.
Okay, I fuck with that. But I've already talked about the Filipina, whatever, ladies that I watch on Facebook Reels where they just cook shitloads of food, usually a meat and some veggies mixed with rice, fried rice, looks amazing. But they also cook some questionable things like cow's stomach and intestines. I watched a video where they skin like 30 dead rats and cook that.
Well, I mean, anything's safe if you cook it long enough.
Yeah, and you're not a bitch.
Right?
I mean, what that one in a couple thousand die from fugu blowfish? Ain't gonna be me.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was kind of a long deviation, but I think it was necessary because even for, like, the most ardent, like, America is the greatest place on earth and we can do nothing wrong, the speech that, like, the Filipino schoolmaster gave felt very rah-rah, like, American, like, a bald eagle flying in the background kind of deal, and it just felt... I was like, this feels corny even by 40 standards. And I was like, it feels like we're overcompensating a little bit here. But
yeah. So we haven't said the P word yet, or maybe we have the one, propaganda.
Oh, I thought you were talking about pornography.
Well, you know what I meant, you little weasel.
Okay, but continue. Tell me about your propaganda.
Well, no, it's not mine. It's the movies, which, given this time period, we need to make it as pro-American and pro-Filipino as possible. And we just kind of want to ignore that whole colonial stuff that happened within a lifetime ago. Also, one of the main characters... was it fathers or grandfathers died? It was his grandfather, wasn't it?
I think so.
Died in the insurrection. And he died saying like some macho nationalistic shit like Philippines forever or something. And they used that as a rallying cry to get people to join the Americans, even though it was the Americans he was fighting against when he said that. The irony was just not lost on me.
But you gotta remember, we had a combined enemy.
Yeah, the enemy of my enemy. See, I never really liked that phrase because I found it too optimistic. Instead, there's another phrase: the enemy of my enemy shall remain just that, the enemy of my enemy until proven otherwise.
Yeah. Did it strike you as odd that every Japanese character knew perfect English?
Well, yeah, or else we wouldn't be able to understand them.
That's what subtitles are for.
Yeah, there was Tagalog. Yeah, Tagalong. Yeah, they spoke Tagalong throughout.
Sorry, Filipino listeners.
Yeah, I'm sorry about my insensitive co-host. But anyway, yeah, they spoke that several times throughout the film. But, you know, no Spanish, no Japanese. Okay, bit of Spanish.
Except for poor Maximo.
Maximo, yeah. He went out like a fucking G, though. I got it.
Maximo, no!
Yeah, I sent that text to you while I was watching that movie. He just takes out a whole truck full of Japanese soldiers and officers with him like a fucking G.
That contributed. There are a lot of scenes in this movie that I really like, but that scene made me laugh.
Because
so for our listeners, if you haven't seen this movie, Maximo is the name of a little school-aged child that John Wayne gets a kind of like father-son mentor-ish kind of relationship with. And Maximo is captured by the Japanese at one point in this movie, and he's like in a truck, and John Wayne and his cohort doesn't know that he's been captured. They set up an ambush and they're like, wow, there's just one singular Japanese truck. Like, how lucky are we? Like, we can take this out. No problem. And like right before they spring their ambush, Maximo, for some reason, is in the front path in the front seat of this truck. And he just reaches over and yanks on the steering wheel and careens the goddamn truck off the side of a fucking cliff. Which is a baller move on his part, but...
And you can see... Obviously, they're not going to use real people, because that's fucked up. But so they use dummies.
They use, because you see all of their arms flail in the same direction.
Yep.
It was like a department store mannequins kind of vibe.
Yep.
And I laughed so hard at the how... fucking silly the mannequins were in the back of that truck.
It was truly a work of art.
Poor Maximo.
Poor Maximo. I mean, you know, this movie made me patriotic for a country I've never even been to.
I feel like being Filipino would be an easy country to be patriotic in. Like Filipino pride.
I don't know. You know, I've heard questionable things about the Philippines, especially since Duterte took control. I don't know if he's still in control.
I don't know. I don't really keep up on Filipino modern politics, so...
He was the guy that is sentencing all those drug dealers to death. Yeah, he's a bit of a hard ass.
Sounds a little bit of an understatement, but okay.
If I'm not mistaken, he killed quite a few drug dealers back in the day, and he ran on being tough on drugs. Controversial remarks and human rights concerns. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of propaganda, backtracking a little bit, I really appreciated the love story in this, or the love aspect of it. Like, I don't think we've had a single film yet where a primary character's girlfriend leaves him, and like it's a big point of this character's story or development is like, oh, what's his fucking problem? Oh, a girl left me. Like, he's got his mind on a girl. He's got his mind on a girl.
Pilgrim.
I can't do a John Wayne impression. I really wish I could.
Me neither.
And this isn't your standard, like, oh, she left me for another man, or like, she said we couldn't be together. No. U.S. Army soldier's girlfriend leaves, goes over to the enemy, and becomes the Filipino Tokyo Rose.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, this is an amazing storyline.
Right? Actual conflict.
I was like I said, I don't know what I was expecting going into this movie, but whoever was in charge of writing was like, they were pulling out the stops on this.
Man. There has to be another love story that we had.
I can't think of one, honestly.
Love and human emotions in my war movie?
I don't know, not unless you think about like Horse Soldiers, where, you know, Miss Hannah Acha like keeps trying to sabotage the cavalry mission, but it's not really the same. And then it turns out that Tokyo Rose actually left in order to help the gorillas, and she couldn't tell her boyfriend because that would ruin her mission.
Double cross.
Man. And then they free her in a little kerfuffle when that town is being absorbed.
I did appreciate them hitting on the East Asia co-prosperity sphere.
Right? Like, the fact that that was the name of the Japanese Empire is just so funny to me.
Because it's like, I think that's something that is missing a lot when it comes to Pacific War films is why, like, for us, it's kind of like cut and dry. It's like, oh, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor and we 5 years later dropped a sun on them. Like, it's a little more cut and dry, but like a lot of times I feel like Americans don't interrogate the fact of like, okay, but why did they bomb Pearl Harbor? And, you know, it's because Japan wanted their own little, like, very much like Germany. Like, Germany wanted all of Europe and to be, you know, the one great fatherland and Aryan superiority and all that shit. Like, the Japanese had the exact same thing. They just thought Japanese people were the superior Asian race and they wanted to bring all the Asian countries underneath their control.
Yeah, hungry, hungry Hitler.
Hungry, hungry Hirohito. Doesn't really ring as well.
No, no, it doesn't. But man.
I'm going to go to the peace ceremony and spit in the Emperor's eye.
Like, yeah, they touched on Doug. A very controversial figure in American history.
Douglas MacArthur?
Yeah, dug out Doug.
I'm going to go hang out on Corregidor. Fucking punk-ass bitch.
Goodbye.
Oh, don't mind me. I'm just going to leave my entire command of 80,000 soldiers to fucking fend for themselves.
Now, in his defense, he was ordered back, and he eventually came back and freed whoever he could.
A true leader... Would have let himself be captured. No, he would have been like, fuck you, I'm not leaving my men.
Yeah, but disobeying an order and letting himself get captured or killed, depriving the U.S. of one of its top generals at the time. I mean, yeah, he made some questionable decisions in the Korean War and arguably cost us the war, but...
Oh, yeah, top general, the guy who wanted to glass the entire Chinese-North Korean border.
Yeah. But do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do.
I can't remember which side it was. But there was back in the Napoleonic era... There was this fresh-faced commander, general, or whatever. And he had direct orders to fall back to a more secure position and wait. But he thought, no, fuck that. I'm going to make a big last stand like all those heroic tales. And he just barely escaped with his life, along with some of his men. I think they pulled off a pyrrhic victory at best. And then he was expecting to get coronated when he came back to the capital, but instead he got an ass chewing and demoted because he sacrificed a lot of men's lives and for what?
It makes me think of that line from We Were Soldiers. Do you think this is how Custer felt when he led his man into a slaughter? Sir, Colonel Custer was a pussy.
Yeah, fuck Custer.
Oh,
so what was your favorite part of the movie aside from the Maximo sacrifice scene?
There's a lot of good things to this film. Actually, I wanted to hit on the practical effects. Like, movies from this time and shortly after the war are usually like super reliant on actual combat footage because they can kind of play it off being black and white across the board. But like, there is very purposeful, like, we are shooting, like, the combat scenes in this movie felt more real, or like there was more. The combat scenes in this movie didn't feel Hollywood the way that like the combat scenes with John Wayne and like Sands at Iwo Jima, like, felt very like over the top action film Hollywood type vibes, if that makes sense. Like, I remember like early on, there's a scene where like John Wayne gets blown out of a goddamn foxhole by an explosion, like throws his fucking body. And I was like, holy shit, that's like, you don't really see that in 40s films really that much.
Yeah, and then the shot after that blows up his partner, and his buddy like flips him over, make sure he's all right, and he's like, "What about so and so? The second one got him."
Right?
To but really hammer home the fact that shit's not going well at the front.
But there's a lot of moments like that, and I'm like, this film, for being a wartime film, this film was shot and pumped out in 120 days. And the thing is that when they shot this film, the invasion of the Philippines in 45 was actively happening. So they had to, like, they did several rewrites for this movie. Like, a lot of it was on the fly. But, like, this movie felt very real, like there's a lot of effort given into it, as opposed to a lot of mid-war films that we see. Like, take like a couple years earlier, John Wayne did Flying Tigers, and like that felt like a very phoned in kind of movie. So yeah, I like this film because it feels like they genuinely put like a good amount of effort into it.
Right.
Not to mention, so I learned a little fun fact. So I mentioned the scene where John Wayne got, you know, the scene is him getting blown out of a foxhole and like thrown like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
So the, I was looking up some like facts about this film. The director, Edward Demirtik, sounds kind of like a Russian name. Anyways, Edward Demirtik, he was a big like noir director during the 40s. So this was kind of like a deviation of what he usually did. But apparently he was like, he was communist, or he had communist views. And if we know anything about John Wayne, he's not a fan of communists.
Nope.
And so this caused a beef between them. And apparently John Wayne refused to use a stunt double for this film.
Hmm.
I don't know if that was like a thing he did a lot, but for this film, he refused to use a stunt double. And so the director allegedly purposely rewrote the script several times to do over the top fucking stunts to fucking hurt John Wayne. Because they had beef together.
Wow.
Which, I love that level of petty.
Yeah. And of all people, John Wayne.
That really hurt, Pilgrim.
We've made our displeasure of him open before. Oh, shit. No, my beer. No. Oh, precious alcohol. God damn it. It's on the fucking carpet, too. Anyway, what are you drinking this evening?
Well, in honor of Maximo, I'm having a Corona with lime.
Well, in honor of me, I'm drinking something called Sour Power Huckleberry.
Sour Power.
Sour Power. I mean, it's no Princess Yum Yum, but it'll get the job done. It's a sour, fruity beer, my favorite. Well, this beer is...
have a second one on deck because you spilled the other one?
I was running... That one was running low anyway, so I just polished it off and opened another one. Anyways, it's not my favorite beer. That would have to go to Berry Noir from Boulevard Brewing. I go absolutely feral for that stuff. But... You know, it's limited, very limited availability where I'm at. Like, I think I've been checking up periodically over the course of like a year and a half, and they still don't have it.
I recently tried. I recently tried a new beer that I was a big fan of, and I was so mad. So I recently took a weekend trip to Santa Fe, and there is a beer called Alien Head Amber Ale. And it's like from Roswell, because of course.
Hit me with that name again.
Alien Head.
Oh, is it like head from an alien?
I don't know. I've never had that, but my brain completely froze there for a moment. But it was quite good, and so I had it on like a Saturday night when I was out at a restaurant. And I'm like, oh, okay. And we were going to drive back home to Denver Sunday. So I was like, oh, let's swing by a liquor store on our way out as we're driving out. And the fucking state of New Mexico does not allow liquor stores to be open on Sunday. And I'm like, what kind of horse shit is this?
Lame.
I'm sorry, New Mexico. I thought this wasn't Utah.
Wait a minute. Do we have that?
All I know is in Denver, you can buy alcohol 7 days a week.
In South Dakota, alcohol sales on Sunday are permitted, but are subject to local ordinances.
Most like local towns do like a time, like can't purchase before 11 or something.
Yes, you can buy liquor on Sundays in Pierce, South Dakota under specific conditions set by local ordinances. State law allows... Okay, that's what I thought it was. Because I don't recall ever getting stopped, like having trouble buying alcohol or liquor on a Sunday, but, you know, I could be wrong. Also, you know... You want to know what else I'm drinking?
Coke.
Because I just randomly found this at the liquor store. It's called Breeze, and it's spelled B-R-long-E-Z. And it's a cannabis and mushroom-infused spirit, non-alcoholic. Has lion's mane and CBD and THC in it.
Sounds trippy.
Not really. It just relaxes you. It's not psilocybin. It's lion's mane.
You know what else was trippy? How did this movie, 80 years prior to Stephen King, steal one of his storylines?
Oh? Which one?
The, like, death walk.
I mean...
Did you see that they turned his death walk, like, short story into a movie?
Yeah, I did see that.
I kind of want to see it. Is that a war movie?
Yes.
We should watch it.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah, and therein lies the thing, but the Bataan Death March, hoo boy. That was a shit show. I like that they showed actual survivors from that.
Yeah, I like that. It was a little weird, though. I think this is one of the shortfalls of the film. Like, I appreciate them showing the Bataan Death March, but, and granted, it would be very difficult to show the scale because we're talking tens of thousands of people on this forced march. And like the scene we see is like 20 guys. But, you know, again, limited resources during World War II as far as filming scene like that goes. So I did appreciate them addressing, like, at this point, like, it's not like America really needed a reason to dislike the Japanese. Like, we had been at war with them for several years at this point. But like this film coming out and like showing them like atrocities that had occurred at the very beginning of the war, as well as stuff that was happening right then and there as the film was coming out, I thought was like an interesting choice to be like, hey, just so you remember, like, this isn't just about the boats.
So I looked it up and want to take a stab at how many Bataan Death March survivors there are alive today as of August 2025.
Three?
Two.
Oh, shit. I was very close.
Last American survivors, that is.
Yeah, because a bunch of like Philippine scouts were part of it, too.
It is impossible to kill.
I had the opportunity to meet a Bataan Death March survivor once.
Oh, yeah?
It was when I was a kid. I was about 7 years old is when I met him.
Interesting.
So I had a great conversation with him. Like, I was a weird seven-year-old. Like, I was completely enamored with, like, veterans of any sort. Like, I loved hearing their stories. But when I lived on the military base when my dad was still active duty, something that was pretty common was like there's actually a great number of like self-published memoirs by members of the military. There's a lot of hidden gems out there, actually. But a lot of times what would happen is like there would be these guys who would do these self-published or small publisher memoirs of their time in the service, and then they would do a circuit of selling their books at like the PX at military bases. So like every weekend I would go to the PX, get myself a slice of pizza at the food court, and like there'd be a different table there of some veteran of a conflict selling his book and signing it and whatnot. And that just happened to be one of the individuals I met once was a Bataan Death March survivor. I met a lot of interesting people that way.
Dang, that is really interesting. You wouldn't have to remember this guy's name, would you?
Oh, no. And the book's at my parents' place. I wish I could remember it off the top of my head. You know, gotcha. Maybe I can Google it. March survivor memoir. Which one was it? That's not him. That's not him either. Give this one more try. Okay, here it is. So the individual who I met, his name was Lester Tenney. He was a tank. He was a tank commander.
Badass.
He passed in 2017. And his book is called My Hitch in Hell, The Bataan Death March.
My Hitch in Hell. What a great name.
So, yeah, I do recommend that book. It's been a solid minute since I read it, but I remember it being quite good.
And can I get that name again?
I'll shoot you a text.
Badass. But, yeah, I'd have to say my favorite scene was, well, any of the ambush scenes. Those are badass. I liked Maximo's sacrifice. That's how you go out.
Maximo!
Maximo, no! That dude who was by most accounts a coward, or at least according to the school teacher, but then he refused to haul down the flag. Got hung for it.
America.
Fuck yeah. Philippines.
That was the other thing is that this fucking movie, like, you remember how Sands of Iwo Jima was underscored by the halls of Montezuma the entire goddamn film?
Like, yeah.
This entire film was underscored by America the Beautiful.
Yeah, when the Americans oh, rolled up. And...
just for...
yeah, and the final scene where the American soldiers bravely roll in to defend that town and reinforce them, and it starts playing.
What I did find interesting was, and something that was kind of like heart-wrenching was the submarine scene. Like, you have like hundreds of Filipinos waiting on the beach and they're like, what are you doing here? And they're like, we're waiting for the submarine. And it's like the absolute like despair that these people are facing, that like their whole hopes and dreams and basis of survival is based on the hint of a US warship that has zero capability to take them away from their situation. Like, that was a hard scene.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
But it also reminded me, have you ever heard of the airplane cult?
Yes, I have. The John Frum.
So there's a, for our listeners at home, Jack, do you want to explain it?
I think it's in... Actually, what am I doing? I have Google. I can just look this up. Let's see. John Frum, also called John Frum and John Brum and John Prum, is a figure associated with cargo cults on the island of Tana in Vanuatu.
Vanuatu?
What the fuck is Vanuatu? It is kind of by the Philippines. It's to the east of Australia and Indonesia by the looks of it. And John Frum is a mythological being in this religion that, if I recall correctly, came to them on a screaming metal eagle, so what we know as a plane, and gave them all sorts of goodies.
Coca-Cola and cigarettes.
Probably. And it's believed that they asked him, like, you know, who the fuck are you? And he said, John, he probably said something to the effect of John from America or John from whatever state he's from. But they took that as his name is John Frum. Spelled F-R-U-M. And to this day, even, there's like a ceremonial raising of the American flag, and they dress up in recreations of U.S. military uniforms at the time. They're not great. They're not one for one, but you gotta give them credit for trying, really. And they build like fake airports and landing strips and whatnot. And they worship him, and one day he will return and give them a bunch of shit.
You'd think the U.S. Air Force would drop them a care package every now and again. Like, you have appeased John Frum.
In a 1960 BBC documentary, British broadcaster David Attenborough asked the locals what Frum looked like, and was told, "He looked like you. He got white face. He tall man. He live long South America." In the 1990s, there still reportedly over 5,000 members of the John Frum movement. Belief is in decline. As of 2022, there are fewer than 500 practitioners. Honestly, sign me up. Currently, only the village of Lamakara is faithful to the John Frum faith on the island of Tana. The rest of the island has been mostly converted by Christian missionaries in Sulphur Bay. God damn it, how come every time we have a cool religion, the Christians have to go and change that?
I wonder if they truly believed in it, though, because, like, most people, like, take Ossetru, which, for those who are not aware, Ossetru is the religion that focuses on worshiping Thor, it's related to like Odinism and all that shit. Also true has like a 10% practice rate or 20% practice rate in like Norway or in Nordic countries. And for some reason, I believe those guys are doing it legitimately. But there's about like a 2% practice rate here in the United States, and it's almost always white supremacists.
I was going to say, you remember Frank, right?
How could I forget Frank?
When he was living in North Dakota, he was...
a white supremacist?
No, at least not yet. He was working for the newspaper of the town.
It's a story arc I was not expecting, but...
And he had the option of doing a story about some religion neither of us had heard of at the time called Prairie Asatru. And it's... I looked it up, their website, so their own words, and it was like honoring the perseverance of our ancestors in conquering this savage and untamed land. And I was thinking, wow, it's weird how no one was here before that. And
that's something.
And I was like, dude, you got to do this assignment, like infiltrating a small town cult. This is the shit that Stephen King novels are made out of, but he wouldn't do it.
Prairie Asatru.
Yeah, it's they're something.
Dakota Prairie Asatru.
Yeah.
Hey, they're a federally recognized 501c3.
I don't know what that means.
That's the nonprofit status.
And yeah, they have that symbol, the white supremacist symbol at the bottom.
We welcome all honorable men and women descended from the tribes of Northern Europe.
That's everyone else, fuck off.
Yeah. The voice. Oh, shit. I am definitely getting flagged for joining this site.
You're joining?
I'm not joining, like going to the site. You know what I mean? Fuckstick.
In late 2020.
The ancient... I love how on their main page, it's like the home tab, and then the next tab over is prison outreach. Like they, like they know that their number one fucking demographic is white supremacists in prison.
Man, yeah, scroll down on the Who We Are page and try to guess how many sex offenders there are.
I left. I already have an FBI agent assigned to me. I'm calling it good for the evening.
Oh, come on. You got to make him work for that dollar.
No.
Is Asa true for me?
Probably not, Jack. Especially not you.
Well, you never know. They could be welcoming.
It's like that Dave Chappelle skit where it's, you know, Dave Chappelle and he's like a blind guy and he joins the KKK and he doesn't like understand. Like, that's what I feel like you going to an Ostrich meeting would be. Hi, guys.
Ostrich is also very much an ancestral religion. We have Rigsthula, a tale found in the poetic Edda. Okay, whatever. It tells the story of our descent from our gods. Okay. Tells of how they walked among us and helped establish a distinct caste system for our kind. We believe that our ancestors are very real beings that look on us as we live our lives. At times they may try to guide our way and try to help us. Truly, we believe we carry a spark of the divine within our very blood. We also believe that some of our strong female ancestors from Disir after they leave this world. Disir are similar to the concept of guardian angel or winter nights in October. We honor them and the memory of our strong women with blood. Okay, so they're feminists. I didn't peg them for that. Interesting. But anyway, we got way off topic. The movie is great.
Yeah. To our Asatru practitioners, I'm not judging your religion. I'm not judging the religion itself. I'm just saying if you practice Asatru and you're in America, I have a strong belief that you're probably a white supremacist. That's all. It's one thing if some Finnish dude was like, oh yes, I believe in Odin. Like, okay, whatever, dude. But come on. Really?
Those who are of similar heritage are our kinfolk and have the same connection to the vine that we have. Those of other peoples or backgrounds have their own unique gods and their own special connection to those gods. We firmly believe that every group of people, every ethnicity, if you will, okay, as they said it, has its own ancestral spirituality and that they are best served by honoring and treading the path of their unique spirituality. In other words, fuck off. I wonder why people think these guys are
white supremacists. Wow, I've never seen a racist be so respectful.
Honestly, yeah, I was expecting darkies fuck off, but no, and I suppose with their belief set, that is a very PC way of saying it. But this ain't it. I'd rather be a practicing member of the John Frum religion.
I wonder how many lawyers it took to write that statement for their website.
They definitely did some thinking about it.
How do we say this?
Yeah.
No, Carl, shut up. We can't say it that way.
No brown people.
Oh my god.
And then they're talking about the Odinist prisoners and prison outreach. Oh boy. Yeah. A lot to unpack there. But what did you think of the final stand of this movie?
Quite impressive. I did think it was kind of funny that they used a Stuart tank as a Japanese tank, but also I get it. It's the middle of World War II. It's not like they can really import a fucking Japanese tank for their movie.
They did. If it really bothers you, just say it's salvaged. Yeah, you know?
But I just found it funny because they took a Stuart tank and then they just like slapped a coat of paint on it. Like they painted a Japanese flag on the very front of it to be like, ah, this is an enemy tank. But no, again, the final scene, like this is a movie that consistently surprised me with its quality. Like the action scenes were good. The story was not all that predictable, and even though it was corny in parts and very like 1940s, like I don't know, this was kind of a unique experience, honestly, for a wartime film.
Man, I wish I had some Japanese or some Filipino food right now.
I was about to say, I was not sure where you were going to take this.
Man.
I wish I had some Japanese war crimes.
I wish I had some Filipino war crimes, you know? The mouse that roared back kind of thing.
I loved how there's a little moment when they're with the Filipino scouts where they're like, all you have is knives, and they're like, they work just fine.
Yeah. Badass.
I needed some more Filipino kukri knife fighting scenes.
I did see this really badass picture from the war where this old Filipino lady is demonstrating on a U.S. Marine how to slit a Japanese soldier's throat to a group of guerrillas.
We need more knife fighting grannies in our life.
Goddamn right we do.
That should have been an entire 5-minute sequence in this film.
We should incorporate that into our military somehow. Some
Japanese officers.
Yeah.
But I think it's about time we gave this film a rating.
I agree. What should we rate this?
1 to 5 hot dogs. No, wait, we did sausage holes a couple of movies ago. We can't do that already.
Crashed cars.
1 to 5. Fuck it. 1 to 5 crash trucks.
Um, 4.8 crash trucks.
Ooh, that's a solid rating from you. What's
I know
what is keeping this from being a perfect film, or what makes this almost a perfect film for you?
It's a really good movie. I was thoroughly entertained throughout. However, I basically have to demote it points for the colonialism and imperialism thing. Yes, I'm aware this is from a different time. Yes, I acknowledge that, but sorry.
No, there's whitewashing in this. There's no getting over that.
Yeah, but there's no two ways about it. Like, this is also very blatantly a propaganda film, but, you know, the American public needs reassurance, because the war was very still much going on at this time. It was just kind of winding down.
Yeah, like, this was mid-Philippine invasion was when it was shot.
Yeah, and Japanese Empire was on their last legs, but they wouldn't admit it.
Yeah.
But how about you?
I'm going to be a little more rough. I'm going to just give it a solid 4.
Ooh, harsh. Why?
Like I said, this film exceeded my expectations. That being said, I wouldn't say it's like a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, no. Goodness, no.
A lot of the points I'm giving it is due to the fact that it subverts expectations. But the whitewashing and the way that they portray how the whole colonialism thing is kind of a big thing for me. So just a 4. But I definitely would recommend this film. I think we should do The Great Raid sometime, because I think that would be a great companion film to this. But yeah. And here's the thing. John Wayne has been in good films, but he's always John Wayne, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
For being a John Wayne film, this breaks that mold too.
Really?
I think so, anyways.
Hmm.
What does Rotten Tomatoes give it?
So, Rotten Tomatoes, the tomometer is 86%, but the popcorn meter is a bit more harsh at 62%.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, I gotta go with the critics on this one. 86 sounds pretty fair.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But, I really gotta stop saying that. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yes. Next week, we will have Balake returning.
Be lucky. Hell yeah.
I forgot what movie we agreed to, but it's another Pacific War movie.
Ooh.
So, for our listeners, go back and check out A Bridge Too Far, Episode 1, Band of Brothers, or Longest Day. Blake is a member of a team that jumps out of C-47s and parachutes dressed as World War II paratroopers. They're called the World War II Airborne Demonstration Team. So he always has a very interesting insight on World War II films.
Yep, we just love having him.
Plus, he has that southern charm.
I know, right? Your continuing conspiracy to take over this country through Crown and Confederacy persists.
Ooh. A little bit of a spoiler. For our listeners, I would like to push a video game. It's not out yet. It's still in beta, but it'll be out soon. It's called Duckolian. And it is a Napoleon Warfare style game where all the characters are ducks. And the gameplay footage looks amazing. But we are currently talking to one of the devs from that game to come and do a Napoleon film with us. But I bring it up because he's from Europe. And I was like, oh, this is the first time we're going to have a Czechoslovakian guest. Or Czech Republic. Is Czechoslovakia still? I don't remember. I'm going to offend somebody. He just said check. Thank you for your assistance in this.
Anytime.
Do you have anything else?
Filipino pride.
Yeah. I need knife wielding grannies more often.
There's got to be at least one of those bastards on that island chain that listens to us.
Probably.
And we'll probably if you're listening to this right now, my friend, I want to come to the Philippines sometime to visit.
We probably will have an uptick in listeners from the Philippines on this episode because we had a massive uptick in Latvian listeners when we did that one film.
We did?
Oh, yeah.
How many?
We had like 30 or 40 listeners.
Damn, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, just from Latvia.
How
Latvian film?
How many were our India numbers?
India didn't really show up for they didn't.
What do 1 billion of them have anything better to do than watch our pot? Okay, I just answered that myself, but
I don't know. Maybe if we did more Bollywood films, we would have a bigger Indian base.
Shit, let's just make this a Bollywood podcast in that case.
Maybe. Dude, it is crazy. I went down a rabbit hole. There are so many fucking Bollywood war movies. Like, we should get one on the table again soon.
We should get one of the actors, too. Dude,
I found one. It was a India versus Pakistan submarine movie. I think we should do that.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, I don't know how they're going to explain away the dancing and the singing, because that's what submarine warfare operates on, is sound.
There's a Bollywood dance scene, but they're all in scuba suits.
It's like the fucking dramatic Russian singing the national anthem scene from Hunt for Red October, but they're just singing and dancing.
To our listeners at home, if there's any movie you would like to see us review that we haven't done yet, just shoot us a DM. I'm very receptive. So if there's some way that we can accommodate our fans, we would be more than happy to bump up a movie on the watch list. Right, Jack?
Right.
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 Anything else, Jack?
I got nothing.
Okay. Well, if you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. The stars do matter. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all those good places. Our OnlyFans got shut down, so sorry to say. It was because of the feet pics.
Yeah.
People were feeling ripped off because you only had 8 toes.
But before we go, back to the whole John Frum thing.
Oh my God, what? What about this?
Like, just imagine being explaining to Archduke Franz Ferdinand in hell or heaven or wherever he ended up that him being shot led to a cult being formed, worshiping a U.S. airman and a man from America.
He would then say, "What is an airman?"
Well, I mean, I'm sure he heard from the news like some flying devices.
Boy, howdy.
These flying contraptions.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Until next time, I've been John.
And I've been Jack.
And we will catch you all later.
Bye.